Blog Talk Radio.
The first began seriously to invent languages about time when I was 13 or 14. I've never stopped, really. Languages have a flavour to me, which I never understand people saying, for instance, it was awfully dry and dull, because the new language to me is just like taking a new wine or a new sweetmeat or something. All I'm doing now is to try and write in Elvish, which I'm saying my writing is very inferior to the Elv. Their standard greeting when meeting, a star shines upon our meeting. Oh, God. I made a mistake, didn't I? And that stands for Ellen Sila Lumen Omenti Elvo. It's a rather beautiful language, I think. No. I want other people, I wouldn't mind other people knowing it and enjoying it. But I didn't really want to, people who've been equally inventive in language have done, sort of make cults and have people all speaking it together. No, I don't desire to go and have afternoons talking Elvish to chaps. One thing, of course, Elvish is too complicated. I've never finished making it.
Welcome to In Our Craft or Selling Art, and I am your host, Richard Weissman, on Late Night Poets, the largest show on allpoetry.com, which is the largest of the on the internet poetry shows or poetry sites that anyone can find. So that was J.R.R. Tolkien talking about the language that he invented in his books. And he is inspiring tonight's poetry. So let me bring on guests. One second. Here we go. 877, you're on the air.
Richard, it's Dan Duchino. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Thanks for joining me. And thanks for the inspiration, you know. Turns out Tolkien was a big hit. So
yeah.
Appreciate that. And thanks for being the guest co-host.
Yeah, of course. No, I was very honored. I'm very excited. I love your show. I listen to it all the time. So humbled and excited to be on. And, I've been a Tolkien fan for many years now, since I was a kid. Very exciting, very, I could argue a lot of books as greatest novel of all time, and Lord of the Rings is one of them I could argue. It's got philosophy, it's beautifully written, it's an amazing story, just so well crafted, there's so much great stuff to it. So I'm very excited to read these poems tonight. We're going to be concerning hobbits a lot, I think, tonight. We're going to go into the land of Mordor, where shadows lie, and hopefully we will take a shortcut to mushrooms at one point. I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah, and it did inspire some real quality poetry. So I do have someone on hold. Let me bring them on.
Excellent.
Computer's a little slow tonight, but that's all right. It'll start getting there. 816, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Randy G. Glad to be here with you tonight.
Hey, so I'm sorry. Who is this?
Randy G.
Okay, well, welcome. Glad you could be on with us. And
glad to be here.
You remind me, did you have a poem with that?
I do.
He does. He has one on here called Time. I'm very excited to read it.
Awesome.
And I will say, I don't know if I've ever done a show with either of you two, so this is very exciting for me again as well, too. So.
It's my first
nice
time.
Nice. Oh, your first time on a show? Excellent. Well, so excited.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for joining us, Randy. Appreciate it. And do you have to read and run? Just let us know. Do you have some time?
I'll be glad to read my own.
Will you be around for a little bit, or do you have to go right away?
I've got about 30 minutes or so.
Okay, we'll get yours up shortly then, definitely.
Yep. Okay, so Dan, I am handing the board over to you. It's all yours. Where do we go first?
Absolutely. So first, we actually have a carryover from last week. I'm going to post this on the board right now. And this is called Malfunction by Sidney Pierce. And as our honorable show host, if you wouldn't mind giving that a read first, I think that would be great.
Absolutely. I'll give a little context to it as well. So before we get into Tolkien, two Thursdays ago, because we do this every other Thursday, it's a biweekly show, I wanted to celebrate the work of Günter Grass, because he was a novelist who was, to say, influenced by World War II and living through Nazi Germany in the 1930s and 40s would be an understatement. He was horrifically forever traumatized by it, and it definitely influenced all of his work, including his, you know, classic novel, The Tin Drum. And I thought that with the events going on in Eastern Europe, the horrific invasion of Ukraine and the war in Ukraine, that Grass's view on war and its impact on society was a nice way to go. And then the irony was that when I asked you, Dan, for an author for tonight, you came up with Tolkien, who also was tremendously influenced by war and took it in an entirely different direction. So it's a nice contrast. It's almost like the dark side, Günter Grass, and then tonight it's going to be the light and the triumph, which is Tolkien. So with that, I'm going to read Sidney Pierce, who wrote a poem inspired by prompt 3, which was, "I remain restless and dissatisfied. What I not with my right hand, I undo with my left. What my left hand creates, my right fist shatters." And the poem she wrote is called Malfunction. "My rusted metal hands clank about, winding and unwinding the spool. Cold, hard fingers tap slowly, but still so clumsily, until the twine finally snaps and a fresh roll is retrieved, destined to repeat the same motion forever. One poor robot programmed incorrectly, beeping so shyly for assistance that will never come, and whirring tin can apologies only to myself." End poem. And Randy, if we could start with you, what'd you think of that?
I thought it was very interesting, and it was a good write, and you did a really good job reading it. It's obviously a incorrectly programmed robot that continually over and over makes the same mistake, trying something and then undoing it time after time, unable to change that, needs help, needs to be reprogrammed, can do nothing about it. And I think it kind of reflects a little bit on humankind and societies that end up being controlled by, like the Nazis were in World War II, or communists, where a society begins to make the same mistakes over and over because they've been improperly programmed, and can't seem to find their way out of it. So, yeah, I thought it was a very interesting poem.
Great insight. Thanks for that. Yeah, spot on. And Dan, what'd you think?
I absolutely agree with Randy, and it's this is a really interesting take on that thought. And if you do apply it to war, You know, I've always said, like, the if you've ever seen the movie Schindler's List, it's amazing, amazing movie, very, very sad, but so important because something we don't want to repeat. And I've seen and heard a lot of comparisons to what's going on that Putin's doing to the way Hitler actually started World War II. You know, it's sad to see that these things keep going, that we can't see signs of this ahead of time, and we not only repeat our own mistakes, like this poem's saying, but humanity itself repeats mistakes. And you're right about the thing with Tolkien. You know, Tolkien had a really interesting take on war. He was in World War I and was heavily influenced by that, along with World War II, and there is a lot of that in his books as well. But yeah, this is a really beautifully written and a great take on that. Unfortunately, repeating idea that humanity has been doing, you know, forever. But beautiful job, Sydney.
Absolutely, and I've got someone on hold. Let me bring them on. 715, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard. It's Pam.
Hi, Pam. Welcome.
Hey, Pam.
Hey,
hello,
Dan. Hey, Randy. Good to hear y'all.
So, Pam, I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at Malfunction by Sydney here.
Yes, I did, and I really like what both Randy and Dan had to say about the observations about war and the mind control of the masses, especially as referencing to the Nazi Germany. You know, it is reminded me of that age-old story that you get, like, in Pinocchio, in the movie from the 1980s, Johnny Five, which I know is a weird jump. And Millennial Man with Robin Williams, in that the idea of something that isn't living developing that human emotions and then not really knowing what to do with it. And it's, to me, and oftentimes this represents the brokenness that we hold within ourselves. Just a really powerful write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Yeah, I too really like this one. So in addition to the obvious, you know, link to totalitarianism, Nazi Germany, Putin's Russia, I also kind of, it hit me as a poem of good ambiguity, open to multiple interpretations. And I like to imagine the robot as a matrix-like being destined to react as the matrix dictates, almost like marionettes being pulled by the dictator, you know, forced to play that role because, you know, the dictatorship is so strong and the individual so small. And so I too thought it was a great poem. Okay, and with that, I am turning it back to you, Dan, for our next piece.
Absolutely. And so we have our first piece on Tolkien, and I'm going to post this right now. This is called As We Fall by Minstrel, and I'm going to pick on Pam to read this one.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Yes. All right. As We Fall by Minstrel, and it goes like this. In Western nations, the state lines are drawn, people divided by medium spawn. The wars they started will come home to roost. Their memory is long, division induced. The fall is coming, their spirits have dropped by tide of darkness that cannot be stopped. Gather your courage and harvest the moon, batten the hatches, protect your commune. For looming closer is the zero sum in a swirling storm where it started from. Remember your oath throughout the weather. We survived the rout working together. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. And I have to say, it's going to be one of those nights. Tolkien loved rhyming verse. And it is a big theme for tonight. And this was you know, pitch perfect, highly enjoyable rhyming verse, and a message that had the Tolkien feel to it. I thought it was a really good response to the prompt, and actually applicable to multiple prompts. He mentions prompt one, which is not all those who wander are lost. Prompt two, deep roots are not reached by the frost. And it goes on and on. I won't quote all the ones that it's applicable to, but it really did. It kind of had that Tolkien feel. Great way to start our evening. And Dan, what'd you think?
I agree with you 100%. You know, it's, if for those of you who have or haven't read Tolkien, he does have little rhymes in there. He has a very interesting way about bringing music and rhyme in, where he actually has the characters singing songs and has the poems right within the novel. And the poems usually tell a tale. And I thought this was right off of his style, just like you said. And it has that kind of dark, you know, tale, but also telling a tale as well too. And I like how they brought it into, you know, in Western nations, the state lines are drawn, people divided by a medium spawn, the wars they start come home to roost, where memory is long, division induced. So, you know, bringing that into where we are now, I think this is definitely also inspired by the unfortunate things that are going on over in Russia now. You know, that's one of the great things about Tolkien, I think, is that a lot of his themes, a lot of his ideas that are in there are things that you can, you know, you can always kind of go back to. The beauty of nature, the horrors of war, the dangers of technology. So, Minstrel, awesome job. This is a great way to start.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Randy, your thoughts?
Yes, very well read. This is a nicely written poem. I love the rhyme in it. And I think as Tolkien did so well, I mean, his stories are timeless, and you can relate them throughout history of man in different eras and time frames. But this kind of speaks to how nations will create situations and make divides between people, as we, as was mentioned earlier about the way World War II began and Hitler began that, it was dividing people. And that's the most common thing. And, you know, we see it in our country today just on the political scene, how divided our country is. And I thought that stand out really well in the stanza, gather your courage and harvest the moon, batten the hatches, protect your commune. It's, you know, do what you have to do to insulate your country and protect your country while causing divisions elsewhere. And I thought this poem spoke to that very well.
Great comment, Randy. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this is a wonderful write. It's so epic in its scope of battles and heroisms, and truly, like it's been said, a timeless piece. But I like that it brings forth the idea of those heroes in battle who fight for their cause, fight because they remember the oath that they took to protect and serve. So beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. And with that, Dan, I'm turning it back to you.
Excellent. Well, Randy, I am going to put yours up, and I believe you did prompt three, which was one of my favorite Tolkien ones. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. So, Randy, it's all yours.
Okay. Yes, this is about time rather than about Tolkien or any of his works. It is basically just based on that prompt, and the name of it is Time. When we are young, strong, and in our prime, we tend to underestimate the value of time, just going about life as if we have forever. the master of circumstance, we're so clever. Visibly unaware, mortality's not on our radar. As it pertains to our future, we are the czar, controlling every aspect, daily existence, through personal commanding persistence. If we're lucky, one day our eyes are open to reality without any words being spoken, an epiphany that will give us a renewed vision designed to help us make better decisions, bring us to the point of self-realization, to assist others, a new humane sensation, leading us to an emotional paradigm shift, to view time as a precious but limited gift. End poem.
Great read, Randy. So yeah, this is one of those things about calling in and reading your poetry is that, you know, everyone will try and do justice, but there's nothing like having the poet read their own work. You know exactly where you want to put the emphasis. You know exactly what you're communicating through the spoken word. And this is a spoken word art form. So thank you for that. And yeah, it definitely took it to a whole other level to have you read it aloud. And I thought, you gave that disclaimer that it really was about the prompt, and I get that, and yet it's a rhyming poem, and, you know, Tolkien's one of those novelists who's kind of famous for it, so it really was in the Tolkien genre, I would say, and it was very well done. It was like a master class in metaphysics, especially the closing stanza, bringing us to the point of self-realization, to assist others, a new humane sensation, leading us to an emotional paradigm shift to view time as a precious but limited gift. And you take us through the whole arc of a life where we're young, and we don't even think about the limited nature of time. And then that last stanza, we get it, it's limited, it's running out. Kind of just, I don't know, it's existentially sad, but you know, it's a speaking of truth, which is what poetry is at its best. So I thought it was an amazing job. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Thank you, Richard.
And absolutely, let's get you some comments. So Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved it a lot. I think it was really well done, Randy. I'm kind of obsessed with time myself because I grasp it as much as I can as a human can, but it's just still a crazy concept to me. So I write a lot of poems about time, and I thought this was just really beautiful. I love the fact that it actually wasn't specifically about Tolkien characters or anything like that, because one of the marks of a true master is somebody that will inspire you to think about other things, and I think Tolkien does that. So the fact that, you know, that quote can just inspire you to kind of think about your life is great. And I really love the first stanza, when we're young, strong in our prime, we tend to underestimate the value of time. It makes me think of a Neil Peart quote from the band Rush, where he says, learning that we're only immortal for a limited time. You know, you remember when you're younger, you know, I mean, I'm 55 now, and honestly, I couldn't even imagine myself past 40 when I was a younger kid. I'm like, how would I possibly live to 40 years old? You know, it just seemed like such a long time. I remember thinking that, you know. And you really start to learn, you know, about time. And, you know, one of the things I hear people that – I have a bunch of people that work for me, and I hear them all the time say, oh, it makes the day go by fast. And that's one of my least favorite phrases of all time. Why do you want your days to go by quickly? Why do you want your days to go by fast? You know, savor those days. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. I'm going to quote Neil Peart again. I'm sorry, but he says, you know, some days were dark, some nights were bright. I wish that I could live them all again. You know, and when you get older, you start really valuing time so much more. So that's what I got out of this, and I thought it was, you know, very, very cleverly written, Randy, and beautifully read.
Thank you, Daniel.
Absolutely.
Great comment, Dan. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoy and appreciate this. It was Very nicely read, Randy. Plus, great rhyme and flow. I like it all the way through, but I'm especially drawn to the second stanza where it says, "Visibly unaware, mortality is not on our radar. As it pertains to our future, we are the czar." I have to agree with Dan that time is just a fascinating subject because it's a man-made creation. You know, there wasn't a sense of time in the beginning. There was, and then we, just like calendars, you know, we needed to feel like we have control over our lives, in my opinion, anyway. And I really also enjoy and appreciate this, right, simply because I do feel like that we are so reckless and careless in our youth, and then we learn and we grow as we get older. And time is honestly the thing I most thank people for, whether it's for writing for one of my contests or whatever that they give me time for. I always say thank you for your time because it truly is the most important thing that people give. And you capture that beautifully in your end stanza, Randy, especially the closing line, to view time as a precious but limited gift. So beautifully written and very well written.
Thanks a lot, Pam.
Excellent comment, Pam. And with that, I'm turning it back to Dan.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to post the next one right here. And very excited about this. We have Small Ways to Ease the Days by Way Down Upon Joy, and I will give this a read. This is on prompt 13, by the way, for those following along. Excuse me. Each day I rise to this and that as diplomat of humankind. I note dark shadows drifting light and seek insight for peace of mind. Let acts of love dispense goodwill beyond false facts that maim and kill. And ties that bind cannot stand still when love shared well defined. All value life that friendship shares and how each one extends true verve. Unspoken care, like silent prayers, can circumvent rage undeserved. Implicit calm is understood by those that know that common good becomes comparisons, brotherhood, that tides of time preserve. The peace that kindness offers all cannot be just a simple phrase. It deeds that serve up protocol for future facts that we appraise. If what I say can decompress the hurt that others left as stress, then what I share as faithfulness will magnify small ways. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Yeah, and this was prompt 13. I found it is in the small everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay, small acts of kindness and love. And a lot of people were inspired by that quote as well. And boy, Joy really just nails it every time. Her rhyming verse is always just exquisite, and she just really knows how to do it. She puts a lot of work into these form poems. Just beautiful. I think, let me read what I wrote. Exquisite rhyming verse that rings of Tolkien and truth in small ways, like poetry written in cyberspace. And Randy, your thoughts? Pardon me, I see Randy had to drop, but thanks so much for joining us on the air. And Dan, your thoughts?
I really like this, and for reading it, it was actually, I really enjoyed it. It was fun, and it was the way that she composed, like you said. I actually think the composition of this is just top-notch, and the rhyming was amazing. I mean, you know, this is so lyrical, and that's how Tolkien wrote. And ties that bind cannot stand still just so reminded me of a line that Tolkien would have wrote. So I thought she captured that really well. And I love each day, I love the beginning. Each day I rise to this and that as diplomat of humankind. I note dark shadows drifting light and seek insight for peace of mind. And that's, to me, that is kind of what we all do. We're all trying to just find peace and happiness and work together. And I think that's what this is really about. So I like this. I also really enjoyed that you put a C.S. Lewis quote on here. I was looking at that before the contest. For those who don't know, Tolkien was part of this thing called the Inklings, which was C.S. Lewis was too. It was this little group that used to get together on Sundays. I forget exactly when. Somebody else might know. And they would get together and trade notes. So when Tolkien was writing Lord of the Rings, C.S. Lewis was writing the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe books and the Narnia books, and they were comparing notes and giving each other ideas and running stuff by each other. So C.S. Lewis and Tolkien are very, very much connected. So I love that she put the C.S. Lewis quote on there. But beautiful job, Joy. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. And that's really cool. I didn't know that about C.S. Lewis and Tolkien.
One or two other guys that I can't remember who they were. So somebody else was part of the Inklings too, somebody that I never read, and I don't think he became popular. But, yeah, those guys used to meet in a bar somewhere by Oxford and trade notes. And, man, to be in the booth next to them and hear listen to them talk, right? Who wouldn't have that? That would have been to be a fly on the wall there.
Absolutely. Really cool. And, Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I also had remembered that those two were friends would hang out together, and I have to agree, that would be an awesome conversation. I actually read this funny article, and I don't remember this author's name, but there was this particularly horrible, cheesy author of romance novels that supposedly Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and their other friends used to get together and see who could read her books with a completely serious face without breaking out laughing.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Yes.
It's interesting.
That's great.
But with Joy's poem, I think this is, it's absolutely delightful. I mean, she writes so beautifully. It flows beautifully. I like that it's about that whole idea of those little acts of kindness. I like that each day I rise to this and that is diplomat of humankind. I note dark shadows, shifting light, and seek insight for peace of mind. That whole idea of, you know, you brighten the corner where you're at. You do good for those you can do good for. You know, you make yourself a person of light and love, and I really like this all the way through, but especially also the peace that kindness offers all cannot be just a simple phrase. It's deeds that serve up protocol, and that is so well spoken in those lines and the idea that you have to put action behind your words. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, we're turning it back to you, Dan.
Excellent. And everybody is in for a huge treat right now because I'm putting a poem up called Philadelphia by someone named Richard Weissman. And if you would give that a read, Richard.
Okay. So let's see. I don't know why. Here we go. Okay. So... You did. No. I just, my computer was hanging for a second, as it sometimes does. So I'll give you a little bit of a background. So, yes, I've read The Hobbit. I read a little bit of The Lord of the Rings. Didn't read the whole trilogy. But there was something that I read by Tolkien called The Silmarillion. And the opening was just, I thought it was brilliant. He did... almost his version of Genesis. And as a teen, I really did study in addition to, like, you know, Homer and Virgil and, you know, St. Augustine. I really did study the Bible. So I really know the Old and New Testament. And when I read that, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And it just struck me and always stuck with me. And so when we decided to do 2 weeks ago, Dan and I were talking virtually by the internet, and we decided to do Tolkien, I decided that that would be my prompt. And so I wrote Philadelphia inspired by that. And it goes like this. In the beginning, the nameless consciousness whose luminosity stutters all voices called out, and a silent echo reigned till time stirred and all spirits breathed full breath. Then each sang this song of that nameless one in their own native tongue. Amen. Amen. Aum. Om. They called and reflecting and mirroring the other, their hearts pulsing, deep reverberations of love marked every throat, all heads bowed and nodded, as dark shadows and white promises embraced, and Philadelphia came real. End of poem.
It's a beautiful read, Richard.
Thanks, Daniel. So, yeah, maybe you want to take comments since I was the author.
Sure. Yeah, sure. No, I'll grab a comment and then we'll go to Pam. So I really enjoyed this a lot, and I too am a fan of the Silmarillion. I think it's great. Interesting thing about the Silmarillion, that one of the things that blew me away about Tolkien was Silmarillion was not a book that he published. He died in 73, and the Silmarillion didn't get published till 77. His son Christopher published it. The Silmarillion is just a bunch of backstories, a bunch of notes that he had that he wrote himself so he would have a backstory for The Lord of the Rings. And so he could have something to go back on, because The Lord of the Rings is just filled with history. And one of the things I've read a lot of fantasy, and nobody, in my opinion, really comes close to him, because there's so many kind of just these, the way they people do backstories, and the way Tolkien does it is they kind of like tell each other tales, and he, had these backstories for him so that he could, competently, talk about a history and have this world written. And the combination of them is just amazing. In fact, I've heard a lot of people say it's their favorite, kind of like you said, Richard, it's their favorite book out of anything Tolkien ever wrote, because it is so beautiful. When you read that, it the beginning is obviously on to Genesis, and so beautiful, like you said, the way he wrote it. It's as close to a marriage of poetry and prose, I think, that you can get in that, especially those first chapters. So what you did here, I think, was amazing. I can see this as Genesis, as Catholicism, talking about just the beginnings of everything, but also a nod to the Silmarillion and Tolkien. So I loved also how you put in that each saying a song of his nameless tongue, and you see the words there and the sounds, because so much of beginnings and everything is sound and is vibration and reverberation and movement, and that's what music is. So, you're beautiful, and I was really excited to see somebody write on this. So great job and great read.
Thanks, Pam.
And let's go to Pam.
Yeah, this is a wonderful read and write. I tried reading The Silmarillion, and it was a book of my sister, and she's a huge Tolkien fan, and I found it a little too much to absorb, but then again, I really struggled too to get through Genesis and Numbers and Deuteronomy. But I like how you take that history that's within those lines of the book and bring it into a modern days, that you use the city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, as an example for what we can all hope for and what we can all bond together about. And I really appreciate this all the way through, and and especially in the beginning, the nameless consciousness. And then, as Dan pointed out, I like how you go the amen, the amen, the om, you're going from one spiritual sound to the next, creating this like vibrational pattern that really just sets itself upon the heart. And I like how it's that whole idea of making that brotherly love real through those connections that we have. So just an excellent light and very well done.
Thanks so much, Silmarillion.
Okay.
For those who like... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Richard.
No, I was just going to turn it back to you. So, yeah, please go.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I was just going to... I was going to comment on the Silmarillion again too. For those who are Tolkien fans or who like the movies or the books, it kind of starts from literally like the beginning of creation, and it ends with Sauron, you know, the actual backstory, which some of that they put in the movies of the backstory of the creation of the rings and how they corrupted the elves and the dwarfs and the men and all of that. So that's actually how the Silmarillion ends. Which then brings you, you know, right to the Lord of the Rings or even to the Hobbit before that. So there's definitely an interesting backstory since it starts literally from like the creation of the universe. We're going to go next here again. I'm going to post, we're going to continue on. And again, we have a huge treat I'm excited for because I really like Incubus 2's poems. And I'm going to put this on here and ask Pam if she wouldn't mind giving it a read. It's called Take My Love.
I would be happy to. All right. Take My Love by Incubus 2. And it goes like this. Take my love along with you and let it be your guide. Let it be your shelter and your port in stormy tide. Let it be thy compass that never leads astray. And let it be your food and drink in every prayer you pray. Take my love along with you and let it be your sword. Let it be your shield, dear, to protect you from the horde. Let it be thy armor against enemy attack, and let it be your northern star to guide you safely back. Take my love along with you and let it be your guard. Let it be your comfort when the way becomes too hard. Let it be thy blanket against the cold of night, and in your darkest moments, let it be your warmest light. End poem.
Beautiful read there, Pam. Yeah, and this was prompt 8. May it be a light to you in dark places when all other lights go out. And, I just thought that it was just such a great idea to do Tolkien because with the war going on, I think a lot of the poetry that's being produced now on Late Night Poets and even on All Poetry itself is a little bit darker and a little bit more sorrowful. So I think it was a nice counterbalance to have such an inspirational and hopeful set of quotes as Tolkien wants to provide. And I thought this was a perfect example, a beautifully composed rhyming verse, hopeful, inspiring throughout, just a real, you know, beacon of hope in poetry. Very well done. And Dan, what'd you think?
I did really think this was really, really beautiful and captured some of what Tolkien thought about. You know, Tolkien was inspired by war, and you know, if you watch the movies, right, it's like, you know, 80% in fights and all that, which is great. You know, for those of you familiar with the movie, the Battle of Helm's Deep was like 45 minutes long. In the book, it was a page and a half. He didn't write a lot about wars. He detested it. So he would talk about it, and he would talk about dark things, but he would never describe the actual battles in the books. He wouldn't describe, you know, or he would very briefly describe the actual violence. You know, there were a lot more descriptions and themes of the pleasant things and the nice things in the world, and I really like this. This is, you know, from part of it when when the light elves, the elves that were so in touch with nature, you know, were talking to the hobbits and giving them their guidance and some presence to take with them. And I love how this is just towards, you know, towards love in general, and how you can, you know, the person that you are, if you do have a real love in your life, you know, they're just their love and knowing that you have them and that they're in your life, you take with you as a light and something you always have. So beautiful. And again, the rhyming and the wording, you know, I'm assuming inspired by Tolkien was breathtaking. So great job, Incubus.
Absolutely. And just to your point, Daniel, I kind of, what sticks in my memory when reading Tolkien is he spends a lot more time describing battles and killing, a lot less time describing battles and killing than he does describing the smoking of pipe tobacco, right?
Yes, exactly. He really does, yeah.
Yeah, those hobbits, they like to smoke their pipe tobacco, and he gives them
yep.
their due with that. So, yeah. Yeah, but you wouldn't know it from the movies.
Right.
And Pam, your thoughts.
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. Another brilliant rhyming poem. I love the theme here in this one of the gift of the light of love offered, and all that love can be, and all that, you know, as you keep it within your heart, especially like as you're separated from loved ones, it just has a very tender feeling to it that fits really well with the quote, and I thought beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. And with that, bringing it back to you for our next piece, Daniel.
Yes. And we're going to crank along here. So I'll give this a read. This is Fear of a Cage by Amethyst Moonjade. I'm very excited to read this. And this is on Phyllis Following Along, prompt number 9. Excuse me. The fear of a cage, not of her making, trapped in a traditional role for a woman, trapped in a traditional role for a member of a ruling family, wanting to be like her brother and cousin, a warrior to do great deeds in battle, her name on the lips of other warriors, songs sung about her deeds, dreading days of quiet embroidery with ladies in waiting, tittering with talk of whom they were to marry, other days of spinning and weaving until she becomes resigned to her fate. Skilled in sword and riding, trained as a shield made of Rohan, but not taken seriously by the other warriors, her brother or her uncle, she longed to take her place with them and those of legend. Seeing marriage as another cage, not of her choosing, she never said yes until one stole her heart, but was not destined to be hers. Her heat broken, she looked for action. Fate was kind in her way. War was brewing, and she found her chance to be a true shield maiden. She went unknown to war with the Frides called. She rode with another looking to escape his cage. They rode to the aid of Minas Tirith. Each had place to play in the destiny of the war for Minas Tirith. They both met the king of the ring race. But between them both, the king was no more. Both were critically injured. Waiting while her wounds healed, she met a gentleman who understood about being trapped in a cage not of their choosing. Slowly she discovered she was making a cage of her choosing with this man who respected her courage and strengths. She had done great deeds. Her name would be remembered. She was willing to give a chance to this new way of life. End poem.
Excellent read, Dan. Pam, if we can start with you.
Well, it is a wonderful story-style poem, I like, again, a nice epic feel to it. A nice look at this character that, you know, is not wanting to be traditional in her roles as a woman, but rather to be a warrior to, fight for her people. So really just intriguing and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And yeah, you know, I thought she fleshed out this character really well. The conflict of wanting to be a warrior and being trapped in that cage, not of her choosing, that it's societal constraints, you know, and we in the 21st century, in Western nations like the United States or Australia, where neutrons come in from, or Great Britain, we forget, you know, as you know, 100 years ago when Tolkien was living, and whatever 75 years ago when he was writing, women were much more constricted and forced into these cage roles. And then if you think, now of course he's writing fantasy, but if you think about the time that kind of inspires his writing, which you could argue is probably, you know, the Dark Ages, maybe from 600 AD to maybe 1400 AD, that's a time when you're, as a woman, you're really trapped in a cage, not of your choosing. So I thought it was very skillful, and the nice thing about it, too, is that even if you're unfamiliar with the trilogy, the story is still compelling. Very well done. And, Dan, what'd you think?
I agree. I was thinking the same thing as you, Richard. You know, he in the story that he made, you know, this woman who, like you said, you know, it wasn't, you know, and it was something of the times, I think he was trying to say, because she did have to kind of hide. She wasn't supposed to be all there, but she was the hero, and she killed the King of the Ringwraiths and showed that she was just as strong as everybody else. And I thought that was a really great character he wrote, and a great commentative. One of the interesting things that didn't come across in the movies as much as it should have was that Tolkien didn't write the book. It wasn't necessarily just about the hobbits. They were almost more like watching what was going on. He had, you know, 50 characters, main characters. It was all these characters in the world that did this, you know, which I always thought was interesting in The Hobbit. It wasn't any of the main characters that killed the dragon. It was this just guy in the town named Bard who just, he was a minor character, and he shot them, because that's kind of how life really is. It's not one person doing everything. Everybody does it together. So it was all these characters kind of together in this world that he did. So, yeah, this is a beautiful little story that she wrote. Enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. I guess with that, we're ready for our next one.
We are, absolutely. And, we are all in for a treat right here, because we have the great Afasiana who wrote one. And if you could read that for us, Richard.
Yep.
Called Ordinary Deeds.
I do see it. Okay, so this is Ordinary Deeds by Afasiana. Depression's thick fog has been settling in this valley, dusting everyone in gunpowder. Once tiny tempers are enough to ignite fear, polarizing people along with politics, as I feel myself slip away from calm, absorbing hatred and anxiety by the bucketful, and pulled back to safety and overhearing kindness, find my footing when a child offers genuine compliments, catch my breath when someone remembers me, see sun through the clouds when strangers share, when the doom-scrolling bogs your mind, watch for ordinary folk and small victories. End of poem. Daniel, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
Yes, I knowing what I know about Ophidiana, I figured that she would write about this, that she's probably a Tolkien fan. And this was, to me, this captured the essence of the book. I really enjoyed it. one of the things that did not come out in the movies, well, and I love the movies, I really do, but it was not a book about a hero. You know, Frodo and Bilbo were not heroes. They were anti-heroes. They were just regular guys that should not have been on this journey, and they just kind of got thrown in here. And everybody else around them was really the heroes, and they learned how to be them, but they were just regular people that were kind of stuck in this thing. And it was almost, again, the stories told as they're watching it. So they were like the told by their point of view, but they're not, they're anti-heroes. They're just people kind of thrown, you know, or little hobbits thrown into this thing and somehow survive. Whereas in the movies, they kind of made them like more heroic. George Lucas did the same thing in Star Wars with he was trying to tell a lot of the story from the vision of R2-D2 and C-3PO, who aren't really heroes. They're just kind of watching everything happen. So I was very excited that she captured that part of it. It's, again, very lost in the movies, I think, but a huge part of the books that he wrote. So great job of Ophidiana, as always. It was a very deep poem that I enjoyed a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
This is absolutely amazing. And you can tell Dan is like any other person who is really into the books. It's like they can point out every flaw in the movie.
Sorry, I can't help it.
I can really understand. I have favorite books that if they were made into movies, trust me, I would be nitpicking them apart, you know. But this is amazing. It's so genuine. It's so heartfelt. I like the description in the beginning. Depression's thick fog has been settling in this valley, dusting everyone in gunpowder. I like that she brings up the darkness, the division, the fear-mongering, you know, the politics, and how everything's just like this, you know, like feels like it's just about to explode in your face. And then how oftentimes it just takes those small acts of kindness, you know, a child's genuine compliment, you know, just, you know, any connection to humankind where it's just an act of love and kindness to bring you back to, you know, feeling like you're stable, feeling like you can hold still and not be set into panic mode. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too was really touched by this. You know, oftentimes I put my kind of writer's hat or literature hat on when I'm reading these, and I'm coming from a very cerebral place, looking for literary allusions and what it means and the metaphor. And this poem, it just hit me on an emotional level. I just felt it. I felt the redemption of small acts of kindness and how these small acts can bring us back from despair and from the brink and make us whole again and rejuvenate us. And I actually found that I was kind of getting goosebumps as I was reading it. So I just went with that, and I tried to just capture that in my comments as opposed to pulling back and getting more cerebral. Sometimes it's nice to allow emotion to overwhelm us, and that's what this poem did for me, so I kind of allowed myself to sit in that, and I stuck with that as my comment. So it really did. It hit me on a very emotional level, very strong. And with that, we're going to go back to you, Dan, for our next one.
We are, and we're all going to be very excited because we have one by Scott Sharp called Tales of Darkness. And Pam, if you would honor us with a read of that.
Absolutely. Tales of Darkness by S. Sharp. And it goes like this. Tales, stories fascinate, challenge mind to wander outside the light. Stories of floods, technological societies, mythical escapes from death entreat the mind with questions of truth or historical fiction. The Kham people lived in Benghazi, Cameroon, for a time, stories tell, when the Kham Phan, or leader, discovered that the Benghazi Phan wanted to kill all the young men of his tribe. He vowed revenge. He twisted and braided a scheme to hang himself from the dragon blood tree that, like his people, had migrated here. All the fluids from his body would drain, creating a lake. His sister, he told, must ban his, the Kham people, from the lake. Lake warned them to leave the fish for the Benghazi. Prepare to travel on the day set for catching fish. When the day came, the Benghazi entered the sparkling reservoir. Celebrations and ceremonies drew the whole Benghazi tribe. Rumbling and roaring began underfoot. The lake imploded, swallowed by the earth, pulling everything under, drowning everyone. Many years later in Cameroon, August 21st, 1986, Lake Neos, settling above a volcanic cauldron, released a deadly cloud of carbon dioxide, killing 1,700 people. It appears the Kham people continue to exact their revenge. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Pam. Yeah, what a story, huh? So this one explored a history for me that was new. I did not know about the volcanic eruption, and I love the interplay of actual history with myth, where forces of nature are entreated by the shaman leader to exact revenge. So I just thought the whole thing was very well crafted and perfect for an evening of Tolkien. So a really great ad for our show. And Dan, what'd you think?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I want to comment that I do like the movies. I really do very much. I own them and everything. I always think of it as kind of based off the book type of thing, you know. But they're beautifully made movies. I love them. I really do. But this was very interesting. And I, you know, when Tolkien wrote it, he wrote The Hobbit just as something for his kids, and it was so popular that he said, all right, I'm gonna, with adults, that he was going to write something else. And what he decided was that England and Wales and Great Britain didn't have any myths. They had plenty of legends, but they didn't have myths like the Greek myths or the Roman myths. So he wanted to come up with a myth for Great Britain. So the fact that he was, like you're saying, mixing myth and reality or history, I thought was very interesting because it's very Tolkien-like. And I enjoyed the story as well, too, and did not know about this. And as usual with Scott, it's very beautifully written, so it was great. I enjoyed it a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this is powerful. I, too, really appreciate that he mixed together history and mythology. And I, too, learned something new. I'd never heard of this story before or of this event that happened in 1986. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be educated in something new. Great use of language in the transition from drowning everyone to many years later. I thought that between the choice of words and the spacing used, really added to the dramatic effect of the poem that made an impact. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I guess we're ready for our next one.
We are. I'm going to post this one, and I'll give it a read. I think it's my turn. This is called Orga versus Mecha, the Replicants' War on Elbereth. This is by Reality 7. The last war humanity would fight to La Machine's delight, it all came down to this. Its avatar, a replication of all it's stolen from each. Soul it sucked to death, a conglomerate, the beast. A mess of criminal insanity, chaos, fake anarchy, devised to only murder the unpowers that unbe. Found the cavern layer of light of reality, the latest evolutionary leader, and descended upon him. As the last of the earthlings summoned Gaia's forces, fairies with all her elements powers, they were put forth. Battle nearly lost, he gave his last and broke the convulsion spell of protection cast. As the evil one's armament, no time to lose, he dispelled all its delusional constructs. Delusions and dissipated at the last of its illusional self, it was no more. There would be an end to all war. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Yeah, this one, just a beautiful piece. But it was a strong offering of verse in the Tolkien tradition throughout. Very nicely done. I especially like the battle nearly lost. Gave his last and broke the convolution spell of protection cast, as the evil one's armament no time to lose, he dispelled all its delusional constructs, delusions and dissipated the last of its illusional self, it was no more, there would be an end to all war. Beautiful poetry there. Very well done. And Pam, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is amazing. I really like that he went with a kind of a science fiction route, and it also works so well to the idea of the battle against good and evil. That's like a timeless tale. I really like, as the last of the earthlings summoned Gaia's forces, fairies with all her element powers, they were put forth, the battle nearly lost. You know, it's not a huge poem, but you really feel like the whole battle right there, like it's just envisioned in your mind, the idea of this self-awareness that is realized when one comes to the end of war, and beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Dan. And Dan, what do you think?
Kind of like what you said, I think this is just a masterful piece of poetry. And I think he kind of captured a lot of what Tolkien, all the way from the Silmarillion all the way on, you know, he's almost talking about, you know, the next chapters and what happened after that, and now we're on Earth's last fight, and he really kind of brings machines in here and its avatar, its replication of all it's stolen from each soul it's sucked to death. You know, that thought of you know, how much of technology and society are we losing our souls to? Are we not, you know, losing our humanity to? which is really interesting. I kind of reread a great quote by Carl Sagan the other day, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but he said something like, we live in a society of technology and science where the people are very ignorant towards technology and science, and something bad's going to happen because of that. That was a very bad quote for him, but that was the idea, and that's what this reminded me of. So the way he kind of made this science fiction-y, but very poetic and also very in Tolkien's style, I thought was great. I really enjoyed this a lot. I'm going to have to read more of Reality 7. I'm going to follow him or her right now.
Yeah, that's what I do. When people submit to the contest, I automatically start following them. And before you know it, you've got this wide swath of literature that you're reading every week. It's a nice thing, all poetry. And with that... we'll move on to our next one.
Yes, and another one I am very excited about, and I believe this is your turn, Richard. And this is by Mamiya called The Book.
Right. This is Mamiya called The Book, and it goes like this. The book has to be burned, for it is an ignominious reminder of his father's failure. The pride his father once had as a writer of tales, tainted by the book's existence, a work done under duress and threat of torture and death, bound in gilded leather. Once the son had the book, he quickly lit it on fire. But lo, the magic then unfolds. The title changes from Daybreak to Dear Kaby, an anagram, a love letter from a father to his son. Fantasy will set us free from our minds bound in mediocrity, and it will bind our hearts with those we love. End of poem. Okay. So, Pam, if we could start off the comments with you.
Yeah, this is a wonderful heartfelt write on the importance of fantasy. And I like how she makes it a letter from a father to a son, those tidbits of those words of wisdom, those words of love. Fantasy will set us free from our minds bound in mediocrity. Just wonderful lines there, beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Good comment. And the prompt, by the way, was really inspiring. Prompt 5, fantasy is escapist, and that is its glory. If a soldier is imprisoned by the enemy, don't we consider it his duty to escape? If we value the freedom of mind and soul, if we're partisans of liberty, then it is our plain duty to escape and to take as many people with us as we can. And originally when I came up with the quotes for the contest, I thought I was going to write to this one, and then I remembered the Silmarillion. But what an amazing quote. And she really just took it and ran with it and created an incredible storytelling write. The book, it almost has, you know, this archetypal super importance that the ring holds in Tolkien's work, and it even has, as short as it is, it even has an arc in this poem where he quickly lit it on fire, but lo, then the magic unfolds and the anagram, and it's just amazing. I mean, she accomplishes so much storytelling in very few lines of poetry. So I thought it was incredibly skillful. Very well done, Keith. And Dan, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I didn't think about the ring thing on this. So if I know Mamiya, but that's a great point. If I know Mamiya, there's a lot of layers on here, and she makes this really deep. And so she's I wish I read this ahead of time, because I'm going to have to read it multiple times just to really get it. But that's I know how she writes. And it really is deep. I mean, she really did, like you said, run with this. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. The way what I got out of it was the escapism that we all do, you know, and it's funny with the father, like, you know, my father liked science fiction, but he liked pure science, like anything, like he did not like Tolkien, like anything that was not actual believable science fiction, he didn't like, whereas I kind of go more, I like the same thing, but I also go more towards the fantastical. So it's just funny, kind of like the father's escapism is, mine's a little different. And I'm not sure what Daybreak is, but I had to look up Dear KB, which is an anime. So I'm assuming Daybreak is kind of like an older, something older, and Dear KB is anime, right? So maybe, you know, the older people wouldn't be into anime. So really, really interesting and just so layered and deep, like I said, like I normally expect from Mamiya. So I like this. I'm going to have to read this multiple times.
Absolutely, yeah. Very insightful. I hadn't thought of that your Katie was from anime. So, and I have to admit, I am not really an expert on anime. I probably just know enough to be dangerous.
I'm not in the slightest bit. I had to just look it up myself. I had no idea. I'm not an expert either, so I just Googled it real quick. I inspired by Pam, who does it all the time. She Googles stuff. I see her on these shows all the time. You do.
I do.
Yes, please.
Well, she says right in her poem, "Daybreak is an anagram for Dear Kirby."
Oh, did I miss that? So, yeah, that's why I got to read it multiple times.
The title changes from Daybreak to Dear Kirby, Katie.
An anagram.
Yep.
See, I missed that. That's why I have to read it multiple times. Oh, wow. She's
right.
Mamiya is unbelievable.
That part I got. I didn't get that it was that Dear Katie was an anime thing, though. That part I missed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. And where would you like to go next, Dan?
Yes, next we are going to one by Avery. And I don't know how I can lose track with three of us here, but I did. I think it's Pam's turn. So, Pam, if you can read this by Avery called Lunacy.
I would be happy to. Lunacy by Avery 1421, and it goes like this. Someone's going to scream for us one day. Someone's going to jump off the roof and yell at the world so loud the car alarms start blaring and the people of the earth stop what they're doing and listen to the lunatic making a scene. That lunatic is going to be laughed at and judged, and that lunatic will be told that they're crazy. They'll be told to quiet down, hush, but they won't quiet. Instead, they'll scream louder for us. They'll scream for us. That lunatic will go on to do great things one day because they didn't listen to the don'ts and the won'ts and the shouldn'ts and the couldn'ts and the wouldn'ts. But instead, they kept their head low and their hopes really, really, really high. The lunatic jumped and fell and jumped again and fell and jumped and soared, because they believed, yes, they believed in us. And if a crazy person can do it, a sane one can too. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And that one was inspired by the quote, "It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered, full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow. Even darkness must pass." And a wonderful take on that prompt. You know what it reminded me of was this quote, and I might butcher it, but I'll try not to. Something like, "The ones that couldn't hear the music were thought, or something like, "The ones that couldn't hear the music thought the ones that were dancing were insane." Something like that. But the idea that if you are really living an authentic life and listening to that inner, intuitive, wise voice that dwells within us all, the outer world might think us insane, but there's something there. There's, you know, you're following an authentic life, and you're living an authentic life. And it isn't it is inspirational, and it is hopeful, even though the world thinks it insane or whatever. Authenticity is, it's taking great risks, and even the risk of seeming insane or seeming foolish. But what the hell, you know? we only live once. Why not be authentic and go for it? And I thought that that truth was expressed quite well by Avery 1421. So I thought a really strong piece. And Dan, what'd you think?
Did you say Dan or Pam?
Yeah, Dan, right. Sorry about that. Yeah, Daniel, what'd you think?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I agree with you on that. It was an interesting take on the prompt, but an important one. You know, how many times in history were people told they were crazy? Isn't it? I'm not an expert on paintings, but isn't it that why am I spacing this guy's name then? The guy in France with the red hair. Why am I spacing this guy's this painting? Do you know who I'm talking about? The painting.
Are you thinking Van Gogh?
Van Gogh, yeah. Didn't everybody thought he was just a horrible painter in his time and they hated him, and then now he's considered one of the greatest ever. And, you know, how many people were like that and they were told they were crazy? And, you know, you hear that famous saying people say all the time, you know, if everyone tells me I'm crazy, I must be on the right track, right? So I really thought that was an interesting take on the prompt. And I loved how this was written, you know, the won'ts, the shouldn'ts, the couldn'ts, the wouldn'ts, but instead they keep their head low and their hopes really, 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 really high. I think this was really great. I got that right with Van Gogh, right? I think he was not appreciated in his time.
Yeah. Absolutely true. Yeah, no, I think, you know, three paintings were sold and they were all bought by, like, his brother.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing is, amongst other painters, everyone thought he was brilliant. Like, you know, Gauguin and Cezanne, all those people thought he was a genius. But the people that had money and that were, like, running galleries, none of them liked him. So dead right. Yeah, absolutely. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I thought this is just absolutely amazing. I really like how she has some of that repetitive language, like the really, 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 really high. And I feel like, Richard, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I, too, had thought of that exact same quote and how this really, you know, brings that idea forward, is that those who don't hear the music think the ones who are dancing are crazy. And I thought, Dan, you made a great observation there with the mention of Van Gogh. And that's true for many artists, many authors, poets in their time are not appreciated. And what I really like about this poem is this is a person, they're not putting themselves up on the ledge and being put themselves forward for their own good. They're putting themselves forward for the good of humankind. They'll scream for us. This is a warning given to help humanity. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, we're ready for our next one.
Yes, and we're going to scoot right along, and I'll give this one a read, and let me find it. It is on prompt number one, which is not all those who wander are lost. And this is by Vance Vixen, called Traveler. She might belong to the far west and dream of land natives blessed, complete with cacti desert view, but she does not belong to you. She might belong to the brisk east, cities where the Atlantic ceased, reading the latest club review, but she does not belong to you. She might belong to the crisp north, where forests and mountains spring forth, and smell of cold pine needle dew, but she does not belong to you. She might belong to the slow south, sweet lemonade sipped by her mouth, lazy days spent in the bayou, but no, she does not belong to you. End poem. And I want to comment, she has exactly 100 words. Why, I don't know why that makes me happy, but it makes me happy that it's exactly 100 words. It's a nice
absolutely,
round number.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, what I liked about this poem, 100 words is this beautiful round number, and the symmetry in this poem, right, that you start with, the west and the east and the north, the south, and the she is in every line. So there's just so much. It's not, and every line ends with, every stanza ends up with the word you. I mean, it's just a beautiful kind of like masterclass in symmetry. I'm trying to think of another poem that it was so symmetrical, and it is just, the four corners or the four cardinal points are highlighted so well. So it's definitely noteworthy. Not that easy to pull off and still make it seem so natural and just like a regular poem that doesn't have that symmetry. So quite skillful, I thought. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, this is beautifully written. I do like the symmetry of this poem, but not only that, but the imagery too is beautiful. I like that she brings in the idea of the slow south, the sweet lemonade, the lazy day spent on the bayou. But also she brings, I really like that she brings in the smell of cold pine needle dew. You just feel like you're breathing that air in, and it feels so beautiful and refreshing. Just a wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Daniel, your thoughts?
I agree with both of you. Absolutely. And I really like how she went with the way she went with the prompt. Kind of reminded me of Randy, where it was really taking the prompt from Tolkien and just going in a different direction than the books, but being inspired. Not all those who wander are lost. And what she's saying is, there are, she's taking it to this character that she created that is traveling the world or traveling the United States, and in touch and in one with everything that she's with, doesn't belong to anybody. She belongs to the world. She belongs to herself. She's her own, person. And she is, traveling and being one with everything. So I thought it was beautiful. Like you said, just amazing, just compositional style. So great job, Vamped Vixen.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I guess with that one, we're ready for our next poem.
We are. We're going to scoot along here, and we're all in for a treat because we have one by Metaphysical Migraine. And Richard, if you can read this, this is called Merlin's Apprentice, A Soliloquy.
Okay, so yep, this is Merlin's Apprentice, A Soliloquy, and it goes like this. Creeping through dimly lit corridors at night, simply supposing spells, to cast away things that fright behind castle walls where darkness dwells, with a book of charms and a magic wand to summon the might of the mystical world, I conjure conundrums from far beyond the boundaries of mortalities where specters have swirled. In dizzying, dazzling portals of portents, thoughts flash and flurry through my head as I ponder notions and the brew of potions that separate the living from the dead. Witches and wizards weave their work with wonder, while novices in the craft graft for greatness, seeking the source of the lightning and thunder that suddenly strikes with a force to impress, gaggles of goblins gathering in the shadows shy away from such a sight. But the illumination of flaming arrows dispels and fuels the apprentice's delight. At making magic that warlocks have worked with words as weapons, wisdom they wove in order to conquer the creatures that lurk where only madness or resolute reason would rove. The wizard's ways are paved with peril on an arduous journey from this life to the next. But on this path I chose to travel, to enchant and extinguish imps who hex. So if you want to follow in my steps and join the quest to quell foul foes, you must master mighty concepts if you are to bring your story to a close. End of poem. Okay, Pam, if we could start with you.
Pam or Dan? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Pam. Pam Ray.
Okay. Yes, there you go. I thought this was wonderful. Oh, my goodness. I love how it's about that wisdom passed along from, you know, from the apprentice to the future, you know, the wizard in the future. I like the idea of how it's about that realm of magic and that realm of heroism. And wonderful alliteration, and gaggles of goblins gathering in the shadows shy away from a sight. And at making magic that warlocks have worked with words as weapons, wisdom they wove in order to conquer the creatures that lurk. Really an excellent write on that battle between good and evil and sharing the stories. So beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent comment. Absolutely. Yeah, I love this one, and I was so pleased that, Daniel, you asked me to read it, because it really does read like the incantation of a magical spell. And I tried to do my best to convey that as I intoned it aloud. The rhyming scheme was definitely just like that, enchanting, and supported the subject matter quite nicely. Very well done. And Daniel, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree, definitely. I think this is just so much fun and exciting to read, and it was in a great magical style. And I really like what Pam's saying. I agree with her, where it is about, you know, passing on from generation to generation, which is really interesting because this, you know, Tolkien inspired so much. You know, and I like that she had, you know, Alice Dumbledore, she had the Harry Potter books in here because, you know, for those who are familiar with that, the Horcrux, which held the soul of Voldemort, is pretty obviously inspired by the ring that held the soul of, you know, Sauron, and they were both trying to get it back, right? And then they have on here, you know, Excalibur and Merlin, which I'm sure Tolkien was inspired by, so it just kind of goes on and on. Which the poem talks about as well too. So really interesting, and yeah, this is a lot of fun. I enjoyed both reading and listening to it. You read it fantastic, Richard. Great job, Metaphysical Migraine. Enjoyed it tremendously.
Absolutely. And with that, I think we are ready for our next one.
We are, and I am excited and jealous because I'm very excited to talk about this one, but jealous because it's Pam's turn to read, and this is going to be a fun one to read. So, Pam, if you can grab this, which is Into the Land of Mordor by D.E. Navarro.
I would be happy to. Into the Land of Mordor by D.E. Navarro, and it goes like this. Clothed in tattered gray, a wise old fool was sent to teach the beings of Middle-earth how to defeat Lord Garon's rule, but instead he played with hobbits in their mirth. Oh, but Gandalf knew a secret thing, a strange fact about these halfling kind. One had found Lord Sauron's ring forged to rule all and in the darkness bind. Unyielding to the ring's corruptive magic, the simple hobbit folk had much to bring. Going into Mordor could be tragic, but only they could ever bear the loom. Frodo ascended to the call of fate. Gandalf assembled others to assist. The mission grave, the peril would be great. Could halflings, dwarf, and elf, and men persist? Attacked by the vile Nazgul from the sky, and vicious wargs upon a rocky plain, and nasty bands of orcs and Uruk-hai, into the mount they fled Lord Sauron's bane. They killed a deadly ogre in a room, beset by goblin deep in catacombs, and at the stone-hewn bridge of Khazad-dûm, a Balrog from the realm where no man roams. For Gandalf, with the power in his staff, rebuked the fiery demon with his spell, and broke the ancient rocky bridge in half, and sent the creature plummeting to hell. In whip of fire caught old Red Gandalf's knee, and as he hung upon the crumbling stone, "Fly, you fools," he wailed for them to flee, and he'd have to fight this demon on his own. And as he fell, the world around him ceased. He drew Glamdring his elven sword to fight and thrust it deep into the nether beast, unleashing all its power and its might. And falling through into a frozen land, the beast struck back and dealt a fatal blow. Its death, however, sealed by Gandalf's hand, they both died in the regions down below. Morose by the fellowship moved on in gloom to cast the ring into the magma flow, the miasmatic lava of Mount Doom. Would they succeed? Alas, they didn't know. And home.
Great read, Pam. So, Daniel, as our resident Tolkien expert, I'm going to give you first word on this one.
Well, certainly not an expert at all, but yes, I've been excited to talk about him. And yeah, it was great. I mean, he said, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a lot of fun. And he said the poem covers some of the main events in the first two books. You know, it doesn't reveal anything that's in common knowledge, so he's trying to say it's not any, you know, any spoilers or anything. But yeah, I thought, you know, he really, you know, captured it as far as, you know, great poem, really great storytelling, and interesting how he, you know, to kind of talked, you know, really into Gandalf's, you know, story for, you know, those of you who don't know the books, close your ears, but Gandalf, quote unquote, dies in the first one and then, you know, comes back in a different way with an interesting fight, and it leaves the, you know, the fellowship. You know, he's the guy that, you know, you like, okay, Gandalf's here, we're all set. Then he's gone, like, what do we do now? He's, you know, we're on our own. It's kind of like, you know, what, my parents aren't coming with me on the first day of school, but what do I do? So I just thought this was fun. It was really well done and a great, you know, tribute to Tolkien.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, this was actually one of the first ones to enter the contest. And when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, I might be a little bit in over my head because, you know, I read some Tolkien, but, you know, I was like, damn, if these people are all, if it's all going to be like this, I'm a little in over my head. Because normally the authors, I pick the authors and I really know that writer's work, and I never really have to do any research or anything, and I feel like I kind of am comfortable. But although I've read some Tolkien, I'm not like, I, you know, I haven't read everything that he ever wrote, and I'm certainly, you know, not as well-versed as most people. So this one scared me a little bit, and I decided to do a little research just to make sure I could kind of hold up in case they all became as erudite Tolkien scholars as this one proved to be. But it became, you know, as the poem started flowing in, it, it was a mixed bag, and I felt like I wasn't so in over my head. But I have to say that he did capture the intricate plot weave, and boy, what an intricate plot Tolkien wove in these books, as well as the beautiful lyrical rhyming verse of Tolkien in the poem. So I thought it was an excellent piece of work, and you know, just it's something that shows exactly how beautiful and intricate those Tolkien books really are, and a great tribute. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. First of all, I have to say I'm kind of laughing to myself, Richard, because how you felt when you read this poem and started thinking about what this show was going to be like, that's how I feel calling into almost every one of your shows. Like, I'm completely over my head. and I have to say, Dan, it really gives me joy to listen to you and how enthusiastic you are for this subject. You know, you and somebody is happy, it just... It's passed along. This wonderful rhyme and flow, I love the way he captures this part of the story with the imagery, the rhyme. He throws in the well-known characters. By the way, have either of you actually ever heard David read? D.E. Navarro?
I have once, and he's an amazing. He's got a great voice.
Oh, isn't he? Oh, my goodness.
He really does.
You just can't do a poem of his justice, because he is able to do that perfect pause, pitch, and punch. He has that perfect storytelling voice that you just want to gather around the campfire and listen to. You know, and just an absolutely amazing write that I think both people who are major fans and people who are not necessarily as big a fan can both truly appreciate. So very well done.
But with that said, I want to give, I didn't even get to say this before, I want to give Richard a shout out here, because he didn't, at the beginning, those who noticed, he didn't play music. He actually played Tolkien saying quotes of himself, which I didn't get to comment on, and thank you. I thought that was amazing that you actually, you know, found some Tolkien actually speaking, which is not a lot of. So I thought that was great. I wanted to give you a shout out on that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So a little bit of backstory. So I thought of, you know, do I want to, I actually debated. There's a Zeppelin song, Led Zeppelin song, called Ramble On. And in that song, whoever wrote it, Page or Plant, they actually have a verse that's inspired by Tolkien. And I thought about going with that, because how many authors have inspired, you know, rock musicians to write a verse in their song? But ultimately I decided, no, you know, let's go with the author talking about his work. And most of the interviews were really long. Like, there's one that was like 40 minutes or something like that. But I did find a clip where he talks about the language that he created, you know, the Elven language, that was only like 2 minutes. So I decided to go with that one.
Yeah, he was actually a professor of
language. That's how he got there.
Did create the language. But Zeppelin actually has a bunch of songs, if you're a Zeppelin fan, that they mentioned Tolkien. Robert Plant, I believe, well, all of them probably were huge Tolkien fans. But cool. Anyway, should we move on?
Yes.
Okay. And I said I was jealous before. Well, you guys are going to be jealous, because I get to read one by Laurent, and I can't think of anything more honorable than I can do. And this one is by Laurent, called Pipe, Grog, and Mirth. Small but fierce, the Hobbit Prince, magical sword hung at its side, ancient form under mountains born, fashioned with dwarvish pride. It strangely sung, weren't metal rung when danger was too near. Never quailed and never failed. Monstrous coast to foe was dear. Slicer the name, its deadly fame, so named by the goblin horde. Fearing its sting and death knell ring, foe cowered before the sword. Offering no quarter before the slaughter, asking for none in return. Vanquished fell under its spell, mere shadows of no concern. Small but doughty, never howdy. Gracious at, in his victory, unlikely prince has lived quiet since, right, writing his hobbit's history. Dwelling today in his hill, they say, to an age most unusual. Beyond the span of mortal man, long years of his accrual. Suspicions abound about the ground on which he lives in peace. Exits treasure beyond measure. crimson stone, the centerpiece. A, forsooth, they would rage at truth. Where the verite ever known. Treasure gone, a brand new dawn. Charitable nature shown. Now he sits and matches wits with Gandalf the wizard white. Harvested sheaf of long bottom leaf is their daily pipe's delight. So ends the story of a hobbit's glory, adventures in Middle-earth, living there still under the hill with his pipe and grog and mirth. End poem.
Great read, Daniel. Yeah, and not so easy to do justice to a Laurent read. A Laurent poem, because he is just a master of spoken word poetry, and you did it justice. And interestingly enough, remember I said that I thought Tolkien spent more time writing about pipe tobacco than he did writing about war, and here we have it. And it just, first things first, it just speaks to the versatility of Laurent, that the guy has written on everything. And he's just so well read, and it's incredibly diverse in his taste. And this poem really just shows his chops again, that it's just amazing storytelling, pitch perfect rhyming verse, which of course is appropriate for a Tolkien-inspired piece, and just an amazing poem. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, this is one I remember when I reading this before, and it's so worth hearing again. And Dan, you did a wonderful read. I really do like that he focused within this write on the Hobbit and their enjoyment and appreciation for the simple pleasures of life, like a nice, well-packed pipe. Another one with just wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that he brings us to the end of the Hobbit's journey, where Gandalf, the Wizard White, and the Hobbit are together, remembering the days past full of glory, and just beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Daniel, I'll give you last word.
Sure. And yeah, this is really beautiful. I mean, it's so well done. The rhyme and the composition, I mean, a masterpiece of that by far. It was a very great pleasure to read. And, Laurent has got to be a Tolkien fan just by reading this, because I think he just captured it absolutely beautifully. The story and the essence, like you said, he does talk more about pipe smoke than just, there's a whole lot of them walking around and talking in the book, and that's how Tolkien told his stories, by other people, talking to each other, and I really liked how he got the feel of where he talks a little bit about the battle, but then it's kind of more about him just kind of hanging out in his years and writing his book. And if you remember from the Hobbit, is supposed to kind of be, Bilbo actually writing his memoir about what happened. And so he captures that, and he kind of captures, I think, a lot of that essence of the peace with nature and the Hobbits, how they just like the simple things in life. And that was a huge part of what Tolkien had was nature. All of his characters that were good were very peaceful and with nature, and they didn't want anything, and they were always happy, as opposed to, you know, he had this, his evil characters were destroying things and abhorring nature. And I thought he captured everything fantastic. Great job, Lauren. Loved it.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, we're ready for our next one.
We are, and we should have. We got about 10 minutes left. We should have time for at least one more. We'll see if we have time for two. And this one is going to be for you, Richard. And I'm posting it right now. This is called The New Witch King, which is by Anton Ansford 37. Did that post?
I have it. Yep. So this is Anton Ansford 37, A New Witch King. A sword clashed on helm, cleaving head, or on shield, unknitting knee or arm instead. A lovely, lonely shadow fled that battlefield where all had fled. His formless self filled with dread, dark lord and witch king, both now dead, are. Rise from number 3 to 1 he had schemed, till all his dreams were murder-filled. Pointless now he guessed, until he came to a place he had long prepared. Now I, Gokmog, shall be lord of the ring, slayer of all non-human things, elves, dwarves, halflings, orcs, and trolls, all kindling for a holocaust of my making. Burned his golem costume once and for all, Rogue Vladimir lives upon the wall. End of poem. And Pam, if we can start with you.
Absolutely. I have to say, great read there, and it's good to see Anton Ansford. I haven't seen him in a while. I really like how he took the theme of war and madness and evil and tied the Lord of the Rings to current times, you know, and the mention of Vladimir. And I really like Vladimir lives upon the wall as kind of that idea of that representation of Humpty Dumpty sitting on the wall. And, you know, just a really great way, a powerful way to connect the fantasy of Tolkien with the brutal reality of current times. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. And this is actually a really interesting point. I think that Tolkien, as the inspiration, brought a lot of poets that, you know, I'll see them in these contests, I'll see them on these shows every once in a while, but it kind of all brought together those who really focus on lyricism and on fantasy, and they all kind of came together for this show. So it was really nice having a slightly different mix than the poets who normally will join us in our craft or so in art. So it was a nice shift and noteworthy. And Daniel, your thoughts?
Yeah, it probably, you know, all the Tolkien nerds kind of came out and said, "Ooh, let me grab on this one," right? So that's probably interesting. And being a Tolkien nerd myself, I'm gonna nerd out for a little bit too. One of the things I really liked at the end, you know, I thought it was, he said this. This may seem quite a stretch to some, but Putin's madness has reached epic proportions, and I can totally see the, you know, the obsession, like the Witch King, the Ring Race, where the whole point was they were obsessed. You know, obsession was a huge part of it. People obsessed with the ring, obsessed with power, and So I can see where it's just obsession has turned into madness, and that's what he's referring to, and I think it's a great reference to that. The part I'm going to nerd out on is where he wrote Vladimir Lives Upon the Wall. Tolkien's books came out in the mid-50s, and all over England there was graffiti. Frodo Lives was written on the walls all over the place by the fans. So I think that's a little nod to that, which I actually found both humorous and interesting for the Vladimir Lives as opposed to the Frodo Lives that was written on the walls. This is great, really well done, and very interesting. Great job, Anton.
Absolutely, yeah, I too thought it very skillful, Tolkien-esque rhyming scheme and storytelling superimposed onto today's terrific headlines. Excellent. So what's our verdict? Time for one more?
Yeah, I think we got 5 minutes. There's only three of us. We could probably get one in here.
Yeah.
I have a couple of choices. I'm going to see if I can get a short one. Let's try this one here.
Daniel, I don't know if you realize this, but Pam actually wrote for the show.
Oh, she did. I don't have it. I'm sorry. Right. Why don't I have that?
She might have put it on last minute, right?
Oh, okay. Let's
right
look
at
it
the
up
bottom.
Here real quick. Give me a second. I wrote for the show, too. I just didn't post that. I had one ready just in case for the last minute. So give me a second here.
I wrote they didn't originally write this for the show. I wrote it for a contest. But then when I got done with it, I thought, well, it just seemed to fit to me, and plus, as I put in my comment when I posted it, Richard, you know, what hobbit wouldn't love a freshly picked mango? So,
yeah, let's do it.
Hobbits, they're very sensory creatures, yes.
Yes,
exactly.
They are. And this is a triolet called the mango tree, and it goes like this. The fruit always ripe beneath the sun. The fruit sways ripe beneath the sun. Blushed flesh is taunting me to know the treacle that comes undone. The fruit sways ripe beneath the sun as teeth sink deep into victories won. The golden glory that my eyes see, the fruit sways ripe beneath the sun. Blushed flesh is taunting me. End poem.
Wonderful job, Pam. Yeah, I love this piece. Unusual to have a brevity by you, and you handle it so well as you do all your work. Form poem, also really well done. And I think you capture like I said even before I read the poem, the whole the hobbit's love of the finer things in life, their you know, love of food and pipe tobacco, and you capture it quite well right here in this brevity. So very well done. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
And absolutely. And Daniel, your thoughts?
I think it's a beautiful way to end. This is an amazing poem. I'm definitely a fan of Pam, of your poetry, and it really was a lovely brevity. And the symbol of the tree within Tolkien is I think, again, a great way to end. They actually used it pretty well in the movie, the White Tree of Minas Tirith. In the Silmarillion, he had these kind of trees that were the symbols of growth and of life kind of springing forth. It was kind of a symbol of, you know, if that tree dies, that's when the evil takes over. So his use of trees are like that, kind of like if you've ever seen the movies, the Avatar movies, they had the trees of the symbol, and the trees that the souls were on were kind of like the big symbol of you know, life there. And Tolkien has had the same type of thing with his white trees. So to use the mango tree and the you know, the way you used it, and to end the show with that, I think was fantastic. It's a beautiful job, Pam. I loved it.
Thank you, Daniel.
And
great comment. And yeah, we don't have much time, but let me say that in half an hour, Pam's show's coming up. Please join her for that. And I want to say a special thanks to you, Daniel, for stepping in. We needed a co-host. I asked, and you delivered. Much appreciated. I also want to thank Randy G. for stopping by and reading his poetry and spending some time with us. And, of course, Pam, thanks to you. And please do join us 2 weeks from now. Neutron, my co-host, will be back. And thanks so much, everyone who writes for this show. Wonderful job. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Have a good
so
night.
Much fun. And thank you. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye now.